Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimo, with the late Lucky Dube and Little Boy to introduce today's show, themed on education and educating community activists. We talk to Bobby Peake, director of the environmental justice NGO Groundwork, about how activists in South Durban, South Africa, made connections between their community's health struggles and the industries that surround them. After 10 years as director of Groundwork, Bobby Peake is creating a school for training environmental justice activists, and we'll learn more about this very exciting future. We also talk with Musa Tramane, who is engaged in creating networks of people recycling in South Africa's waste dumps, and the challenges and successes of his work as waste campaign manager. It's my great pleasure to welcome Bobby Peake, director of the environmental justice NGO Groundwork.
Well, thank you, Susan, and thanks for having me on the show. Well,
it's great to have you on the show, Bobby. Well, you're doing a lot of very important environmental things, and we're going to learn more about Groundwork. Also, you work a lot developing capacity with activists, and it's one of our areas that we love to talk about in Raising Sand.
Great. I look forward to sharing my ideas with you.
So let's talk first about Groundwork, how it came about, what it does.
Groundwork is an environmental justice non-profit organization in South Africa, and there are 7 staff members in Groundwork in South Africa. And we also have a little small presence in the US in Washington, where we have 1 staff member working part-time for us. Because there's a very big, interesting history between environmental justice in the States and how environmental justice merged or emerged in South Africa. So how Groundwork came about is partly through this historical process. In the 90s, as an individual, I lived next to an oil refinery.
This was in?
In South Durban.
South Durban.
Yeah, I lived in South Durban, next to an oil refinery, 140 meters from the fence line, and never bothered about it. My mother died of cancer, my niece died of cancer, 2 of my rugby football friends died of cancer. I had asthma and I had to be sent off to boarding school because of my asthma. But never ever thought of the oil refinery in relation to the illness. And then when I was doing my master's, I fortunately linked up with Professor David Wiley from Michigan State University, who was doing research into an emerging new democratic South Africa in 1994 and looking at how communities and industry operate in a new globalizing situation, especially as South Africa was entering and globalizing in a new democratic era. So I then started questioning, well, what's going on here? Because as we did the research, we started unpacking how there was an inequitable relationship between residents who were suffering from pollution from the engine oil refinery, which was originally a mobile oil refinery in South Durban, and a Shell oil refinery nearby. How they had no power, yet they were trying to debate with these industries who held all the power. And the communities, I could, through the research, pick up very clearly how the industry was lying, hiding information, not wanting to speak about things that mattered to the community. And what mattered to the community was pollution reduction, social investment, good, decent jobs long term. And what the industry wanted to speak about was, let's talk about talking. And at that stage, then I started putting all the puzzle pieces together and said, oh my God, I've been here for 30 years and I haven't questioned this. And so from there on, started working, resisting the oil industry in the community, working with community people to build our awareness about how we can challenge the oil industry in South Durban, which was both Shell and Mobil. Well, then it wasn't Mobil and now became Engen. And through that process, started working with the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance. Then started,
which was already in operation?
No, we had started it.
Okay.
Yes, out of our sudden awareness in 1994 around the reality of this industry, we realized that as a multi-racial or multi-ethnic community that is living around the oil refinery, people of Indian origin, people of mixed origin, both black and white, and people of white origin and black African people, We're all living around the World Refinery, but we were all separated by apartheid. So we never spoke to each other about the World Refinery.
Oh, interesting.
So suddenly the World Refinery galvanized in 1994 in a new democratic era. Mm. It wasn't only the voting that galvanized us, but democracy was attained through recognizing, wow, there is this injustice. And we can collectively work with our democracy to challenge this injustice. So that's when we started the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance in 1995. In November was the first meeting.
Must have been a very exciting time.
It was phenomenal. We got to shake the hand of our ex-president and our first president, Nelson Mandela. And if it wasn't for Madiba, if it wasn't for Mandela coming to South Durban on the 25th of March, 1995, we wouldn't be where we were today. Because he came in 1995 to open a new engine plant. And as residents, we protested against Mandela. And being typical Madiba Mandela, he looked at us, stopped his carcade, and before his security people realized what had happened, his car stopped. He got out of the car, and his security people were about 100 meters ahead of him at the security gated engine. It was obviously a nightmare for his security staff. He got out of the car, shook our hands, and said, "Why are you protesting?" And that evening he met with us on the 25th of March. Hmm. And on the 28th of March, he flew back down to Durban with the Minister of Environment, the Minister of Minerals and Energy Affairs, the Minister of Health, and of course, Susana Zuma. And he said, "Okay, here are all my ministers, and here am I." And here's the industry. He brought the CEO of Engen down from Cape Town, and he said, "What are your concerns?" And that was it. He was there for 2 hours. He spoke to us. He then handed over, obviously, and delegated the work to his various ministries.
Hmm.
But he opened that wedge. And we took that opening, we took our democracy, and we forced, and we challenged, and we made it happen for ourselves as residents and activists in the area. And out of that process, we realized, hey, we are all individual communities of different color speaking to Mandela, but actually we're not. We're one. We are South Africans. And that's how the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance came out, recognizing that we are one. Whereas the industry was very happy when we were seen as separate groups because they could conquer and divide, which they still try to do today. Give some groups money, don't give other groups money. So we managed to unite, and through that process also managed to resist money from industry. So that was where I cut my teeth and worked with community folk, and that's where we learned to challenge industry and built our capacity to understand complex oil refinery, complex social political debates, complex environmental political debates, and all of this, and this is why America, the United States is important. While all of this was happening in 1995, we were sharing experience or learning from the experience of people in Richmond out in San Francisco.
In California.
They were sharing their experience with us.
You're talking about Richmond in
West Coast Toxic Coalition.
By Chevron.
Chevron, yeah. Okay. Next to Chevron, yeah. And Hendrik Clark worked with Graham Boyd, who was an environmental lawyer at that time in the US, and challenged Chevron when they had the accidents, and came up with a very good neighbor agreement where Chevron had to pay the city money for violation of rules and regulations, and also had to then invest in the community in terms of health facilities, etc. So that was happening in 1994. By chance, Graham Boyd, who was the lawyer, was in South Durban when we were challenging Engen. He brought that experience, walked with us into the meeting with Engen. And I'll never forget the first day we walked into that meeting. 2 hours later, when we walked out of the meeting, the engine executive management had major sweat patches underneath their arms. It was just evidence that if you bring in a lawyer who is working with the people and for the people, and you merge that legal and activist reality together, you can have a good campaigning process.
You're listening to Raising Sand Radio on Stanford University's KZSU FM 90.1. I'm Susan Gallimore, host of this weekly hour-long show airing progressive ideas and voices, and we're talking today with Bobby Peake, Director of Environmental Justice NGO Groundwork.
These are complex connections to make. Did it take long for people to begin to work through it, or was it people sort of knew internally what was happening, they just needed to give a name and a nomenclature to it?
In terms of what was emerging in South Durban or the connections with the US?
In terms of their understanding of how industry impacted them and their communities.
Yeah. I think people had, in South Africa, for a long time, challenged the state. So in terms of activism, people were very aware how to organize, mobilize, and challenge for a democratic process. Now what we had were facing was an undemocratic entity like an oil industry in a democratic neighborhood trying to force its agenda down the community. So all we did was take that decades of activism, of resistance and mobilization that we had managed to foster under apartheid and transfer it. So they quickly saw how to respond. Obviously we had to learn a bit more about the industry and learn a bit more about environmental justice, but we all know that environmental justice in the United States emerges from the civil rights movement. You know, so it wasn't a very big leap to make.
Mm-hmm.
So while this was going on, ironically, in South Durban, what is happening nationally is that there's another debate with the big NGOs in the country. Well, not linked to South Durban directly yet, except through one organization. And they're talking about environmental justice in South Africa. And they also got independently connections within the US. So there are these both strands of environmental justice emerging in South Africa at a local level and at a national level with connections back in the US. So the likes of Donna Alston, the likes of Hitan Kalan, who's a South African living there, Rob Bullard, all these folk in the mid-90s are informing challenges in South Africa and sharing that environmental justice knowledge with South Africans.
Hmm.
And Damu Smith was another name that just comes to mind.
Hmm.
So Hitan Kalan from the South African Exchange Program on Environmental Justice, which is now Groundwork US, that program connects US EJ activists in the 90s with South African EJ activists. And that process continues to build. And a couple of visits back and forth up until the noughties. So that's how South Durban emerges. And then, talking about how Groundwork comes about, after that, I then join the Environmental Justice Networking Forum, which is this national organization, working with EJ people around the country, 450 organizations countrywide, who is the voice of environmental justice in South Africa. And we work with EJNF, myself, Gillian, and Linda Ambler, and a group of other people. We work with EJNF until 1999, where there's a political split in EJNF, and quite a few of us leave, but recognize that while we have had major successes through the Environmental Justice Networking Forum, for instance, democratizing environmental justice and democratizing environmental governance, we get environmental justice mentioned in law. But it's one thing get it mentioned in law, it's another thing activating it. So we then leave EJNF and start Groundwork in June 1999 with the main aim of working with communities who are resisting injustices around air pollution, around waste, and around corporates, to be able to take the policy victories we've had in the 90s and to make those into active victories on the ground in the 2000s.
Huh.
So that's how Groundwork emerges. Bit of a long story, but...
Yeah, and let's, before we move on, talk about how you support yourself.
Groundwork is a non-profit organization, and we have always, since day one, not accepted the South African government money and also not accepted corporate money. So our fundraising is all through churches in, for instance, Germany, some foreign government support through the Danish government, Dutch NGO support, and Dutch government support through NGOs like Novib, Oxfam, NGOs like Hibos, ICO. These are all within the Netherlands, and foundations in in the UK and foundations in the States.
Mm.
So in the United States, we have been very fortunate to receive funding over the years from the New World Foundation, the Goldman Foundation, the Marisla Foundation, and a variety of others. So it's a very broad non-profit funding base that keeps groundwork and our work in the communities going.
And if individuals want to get involved, make a contribution, they can do so?
Yes, individuals can do so wherever they are in the world.
And they can do that through the website?
They can do that by just communicating with us, because if individuals want to support us, they, in the United States, they can support us through the South African Development Fund, which is our non-profit organization that channels the funding because of tax purposes through the United States.
South African Development Fund.
FRESA@IGC.org.
And FRESA, FRESA
at IGC.org. And Judy Blair has been working with us for many years and with many other South African organizations. So FRESA, or the South African Development Fund, works at supporting environmental justice in South Africa, health in South Africa, the arts as well in South Africa. So they're a very long-standing organization in the US that support or get support for South African activities locally.
And let's just give a plug actually for Groundwork's website, which has an enormous amount of information, including reports and documents that people can download, which is groundwork.org.za.
Yeah. I mean, I think people should visit it because there's information from anything from the World Bank and how the World Bank does improper funding in Africa, to information on waste pickers in Africa, people living off landfill sites. So yes, please visit groundwork.org.za.
If you're just tuning in, this is Raising Sand Radio on KZSU FM 90.1, Stanford University, talking about environmental justice with Bobby Peake. The second half of our show today will be about waste and waste pickers in South Africa with Groundwork's waste campaign manager, Musa Tlamane. I asked Bobby Peake if the way South Africa deals with its waste stream is similar to that of other developing countries.
Yes, it is. And I think the reality is that as we are driven by consumerism globally, and the story of Stuff, which is a phenomenal DVD made in the US, highlights how corporations in the 50s have molded people's thinking on consumerism. Yes, we generate a lot of waste. But while we generate a lot of waste, and that is wrong, we need to make sure that that waste doesn't actually become waste, but that it can be recycled and can be reused. And South Africa is in a very interesting political process now, at a political crossroads, because we have said to government, and we managed to get government to recognize, that recycling waste, people recycling waste in the streets, which are the poor people, people recycling waste from land sites, which are also poor people, you cannot isolate these people, you cannot push these people off these places, because that's where they earn a livelihood. So they've been finally recognized by our courts and by the South African regulations that before government makes policy, they have to negotiate with the poorest of the poor. So that's part of what democracy does in South Africa.
You're listening to Raising Sand Radio on Stanford University's KZSU FM 90.1. I'm Susan Gallimore, airing progressive ideas and voices, talking today with Bobby Peake. We will talk next with Groundwork's waste campaign manager, Musa Tlamane, on waste pickers, so stay tuned.
I want to use your expertise as a, I'm going to say, training the trainer, training the activist, and let's talk about that process, because as you say, there's a long history of activism here, but I'm curious, I know in the United States we have a long history too, but we have some cultural idiosyncrasies that sometimes prevent us from working closely together. And I've done radio shows in the past, and I'll encourage our listeners to go and listen to some of those shows on the website, which is raisingsandradio.org, and they can download any of our shows from that site. I'm real interested in how we develop capacity in activists to, number one, be able to speak from their particular point of growing expertise, how perhaps to speak against the grain, ideas that are perhaps they're new. So let's talk about how the activist community is trained here. First of all, I do want to say that at the Eskom protest yesterday, I noticed that a lot of people came in from South Durban, the area that you are very familiar with, and there was a very interesting cross-section of people. A lot of people from young to very old, across class, across color, across, I guess, socioeconomic realities. That's quite a cultural mix. Mm. And how do you get people to listen to one another's stories and empathize and want to work together?
It is a long and mobilizing, organizing process. And we were very fortunate in South Durban in 1994, as democracy was emerging, to understand that as different communities live in Exxon Oil Refinery, we all face the same problem. Now, the same reality was happening in different parts of South Africa. So in Johannesburg, you had communities coming together of different class, different color, around a toxic landfill site, which we know as Kloofkop and Margolis. And they were resisting those landfill sites. But that coalition of class, race, broke apart after this little victory was attained.
Mm.
What makes it so different in South Durban is that it wasn't a once-off victory. South Durban people have been forced to live with dirty industry in the neighborhoods, and it's across South Durban. And people realize that, and I guess if it was a once-off victory that we got engine shut down and moved away, maybe we wouldn't have had the glue that kept us together.
Uh-huh.
But what it kept us together and keeps people together now beyond engine, so the engine battle is no more. Well, it's still going on, but it's not the glue. Is that people recognize that environmental injustice, as is perpetuated by corporate power and political collusion with corporate power, it affects all people, especially those mostly of a lower economic class. And so you have people being white, Indian origin, colored, black, all living in ghettos, or all, as you would know in the US, public housing situations, or in poor income areas, and recognizing that they have to stand together. And first it was engine, but then recognizing, hey, this reality of engine as an entity, as an oil refinery in the neighborhood, is just a manifestation of a broader reality. So what we're actually fighting as a collective is the broader socio-political reality and corporate reality in South Africa and globally. And people in South Durban cottoned onto this. They got to understand that it's just not about the local oil refinery. And that's why the South Durban reality has maintained over these years. Because people soon said, it's not only about where I live, but it's about the whole political system that we have to challenge. And that has been because people have been, the work in South Durban has happened over now close to a decade and a half of day in and day out people speaking about these things at public meetings, protests happening continually, keeping it at the forefront of people's minds. So that the one good thing that the organizers have done in South Durban is to have a continual presence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult because there's a very slow victory reality. Victory doesn't come within a year. And often when you have one step forward, you have two steps back because you're faced with such a big political and corporate reality. So, yeah, it is about day-to-day organizing on the ground. And that organizing then touches school children.
I was going to say, how do you bring in the younger folks? How do you begin to feed your less experienced people so that they become leaders in their own right?
Well, in South Durban, I'll talk about groundwork just now, but in South Durban, the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance recognized that they have to target schools very early on. Already in the 90s, they were working with schools. We had negotiated with schools about when can students come and protest and why they should be protesting.
Mm.
Then, after that, we were presenting papers in schools. And then students came to us, so what projects must we do? And so this whole environmental justice debate became an issue that was actively taken up in schools. We did bucket brigade samples. where the Bucket Brigade is the air monitoring system, which we learned from through Community for Better Environment out in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. And the Bucket Brigade system was brought to South Africa by Denny Larson and the South African Exchange Program on Environmental Justice. And children liked it. You could see somebody taking an air pollution sample. You got the results back in 2 weeks' time. It didn't cost $20,000. It cost nothing more than $1,000 to do that. And people said, wow, this can be done. And sadly, but fortunately, the school or the population that was most effective and we could be able to understand the best was the school, because it's a resident, it's a population that is there consistently throughout. So you have young children coming in and going, but it's a consistent grouping of age of children. And the research through the Bucket Brigade and with Ann Arbor University in Michigan highlighted that the children in South Durban have an asthma rate of four times other children elsewhere. 52% of the children have asthma in schools in South Durban. And the cancer rate, the risk of cancer in South Durban is 250 times your norm that would be accepted. So that brings enough reality to school children, to principals, to teachers, to mothers, to fathers, to say, well, our children need to be involved. And so you see children at protests. You see children delivering messages in big seminars. And so there's a very aware young population in South Africa.
When we were seeing the immigration rights protests in the United States recently, young people left school to participate, and there was a huge to-do about it. It was very unacceptable. So that's actually interesting, and that you've got the support of the teachers and the schools. I think that's quite unique.
The reality is that people are feeling it themselves. So these are students that are feeling it themselves, and I think therein lies the thing that brings people to the streets.
It's not a concept out there.
So that is important. But there's just a broader awareness in South Durban because of this organizing for some time. And yes, people frown upon children being used in protests. People frown upon that. But these are not children being used in protests. These are children that are aware of what's going on.
Affected.
And are prepared to do this with the consent of their parents. And I must say, on a few occasions, it has been the children's presence in the street that has resulted in government, for instance, saying we will close the Umlazi toxic landfill site down, because it was just too much for the government to repeatedly, over a period between 1994 and 1996, ever so often having to face these children in the streets who were saying, we don't want this toxic landfill site near our school. So eventually government just said, close it. You know, it's like, okay, let's close it. It's because they were embarrassed, you know.
And is it true to say that there are other places in South Africa where the same amount of activity or activism is happening around particular issues like environmental justice?
I think around energy provision, there's around South African townships a lot of mobilizing, a lot of communities challenging government and how government provides electricity and energy for homes. And it's important to recognize that energy is an environmental justice issue, because people who do not have energy from the state have to burn coal and wood indoors. And the reality, and a study that we did about 5 years ago, showed that for people that burn coal indoors, the acute bronchial problems amount to 65% of the population. And at that reality is that people also lose 9 economic working days every year in the Vaal Triangle, which is south of Johannesburg, because of indoor air pollution. So in townships where people should be getting free basic electricity in order that they don't have to burn coal in homes and burn wood in homes to keep themselves warm in winter, that is a mobilizing reality. And people are now seeing it, well, wow, Eskom, as a South African state utility, burning coal, what does it mean for society in general, and what does it also mean for them, Eskom not allowing us to get clean energy. That means we have to burn coal indoors.
And I want to remind our listeners that we do have a show with another member of Groundwork, Rico Europido, talking exactly about that, talking in more detail about the role of Eskom and the role of energy and clean energy and what it means and all of that. And I really urge our listeners to go and listen to that show too.
This is Raising Sand Radio on Sanford University's KZSU FM 90.1. I'm host Susan Gallimore, and we turn now to Environmental Justice School that Bobby Peak and Groundwork is creating to train environmental justice activists. In the segment we just heard, I mentioned a protest about electricity rate hikes that Bobby Peak and I attended recently, and listeners can go to the website raisingsandradio.org to download and listen to that show.
Well, Groundwork is planning some time now, and it's finally off the road, and we've got the curriculum there. It's what we call an environmental justice school. Because we recognize that building capacity in communities is about building strong, effective, for want of a better word, activists, leadership, but there's a word that is often used in South Africa called cadre, which is a worker. Somebody who embodies the spirit of fighting for struggle. Often you hear the word comrade, but this is a cadre, which means somebody who's working with and in the process. And what Groundwork has done is we have developed a proposal for an environmental justice school where we will work with community people from around South Africa and hopefully in future Africa to bring them in for 1 year intensive training. So we get two people per community who we hope will stay within that community and work at institutionalizing and mobilizing for environmental justice in communities. And we will bring them in and talk about, okay, what is environmental rights? What is environmental justice? So having two modules on that, having a module on environmental issues such as water, air pollution and waste, which we call technical skills. So you're not only understanding the broader political economy and environmental rights and environmental justice and economic justice, but you're mixing the science. So taking the science of water pollution, air pollution and applying that to what you've learned at the political level. And then the other two modules, one is on communication, media and writing, because we have to write, we have to communicate, we have to write funding proposals, we have to write arguments why we want things. So that is the next module. And the fifth module is what we call a type of training campaigning skills, where you as a community member are trained in or worked with in the reality of facilitation. So how do you facilitate complex groupings of people? How do you manage meetings? And so that is the fifth module. And these modules will work very much like a university degree. It's all in parallel. So people using all the different skills they're learning at the same time, rather than learning one. And, you know, it's 4 months in-house where we will bring students in and work with folk in Pietermaritzburg, in Durban, with special people to come in and train for 4 months. Then folk go back to the community, work in their community with the experience they've gained for another 3 to 4 months, come back to Groundwork and spend the last 2 months in Groundwork debriefing. Okay, so what is our learned experience, our practical experience? So what does it mean?
Interesting.
And how then and hopefully after a year they can go out with a model, a proposal, a response to their own community challenges. So that environmental justice school, we're starting in January 2011. And hopefully in the next couple of years, it will be extended to Africa as well.
That's a really exciting notion. Are there any other places that are doing that?
Yes. We, many years ago, sat around a campfire with environmental Earth Rights International, who was based out of Washington, and it was literally around a fire, and we started talking about the schools that they have, which are similar, out in the Amazon. and out in Burma, which is based on a similar model. And after many years of thinking about what they were doing, we then thought, well, we think that something like this will be useful in South Africa. So yes, there are those long-term models. But what we find globally, which is, I think, a good organizing process, but not necessarily always a good learning process, is that you find what we call winter schools or summer schools.
Uh-huh.
So what happens is people go away for 1 week and they learn about one issue. So about globalization, and activists get together and they share experience, and it's an intense week of films, of sharing experience, of reading papers, of challenging. You do it for 1 week and you go away very fluent in a particular issue. But that fluency doesn't last because it's a moment.
Yeah.
And it builds capacity and it builds collectiveness, but it doesn't build longevity. So those schools are important, however, for mobilizing. So our long-term environmental justice school will link up with the South African winter schools, autumn schools, and summer schools, where some of these themes emerge, but only for a week,
mm-hmm.
Where activists go to as well.
So how can our listeners learn more about this?
The school.
The school that you're envisioning.
We're presently developing a proposal for the school to obviously go to foundations and funders to ask them for support for the school for 2011.
And so far there's been a good response to the idea out there?
We've workshopped the idea with NGOs, non-profits in South Africa, who do similar stuff but at a very small, as I said, weekly scale. Mm-hmm. And they've been very supportive of it.
Mm.
We've gone to our board and our members, our community people we work with, and they're very supportive of it. We've also worked with Friends of the Earth International, who is our mother organization. Groundwork is Friends of the Earth South Africa. And Friends of the Earth International is the biggest environmental network globally.
Mm.
And we have worked with them on this, and they've supported the idea. So yes, there's lots of support out there. And we will package this, and hopefully by, I would say, April, start having public information about this on our website.
Mm.
In the next term of this first half of the year, so that people can learn more about it and hopefully support it.
Great pleasure to welcome Moussa Kamene, who is the waste campaign manager at Groundwork. Welcome, Moussa.
Yes, thank you very much, ma'am.
Explain to our listeners what the waste campaign manager does.
I'm working for an NGO. For now, I'm only concentrating on one thing, organizing waste pickers who are working on the streets and waste pickers who are based at various landfill sites in South Africa. So those waste pickers, most of them are not organized to fight for their rights against the municipality. Some of those waste pickers were being abused by municipal officials, by the security, and so on. So they needed someone with a particular expertise of organizing. So that is why I opted to go to different landfill sites and try and organize them.
Moussa, before we go on, can you explain to our listeners what a waste picker does?
Okay, a waste picker is someone who recovers waste recyclables from different landfill sites or from somebody's household.
Plastics.
Plastic, cardboard, metals, paper, all the things that are recyclable, all the things that can be reused.
And those are the things that they can sell and make a living from?
For sure.
So yeah. You're organizing them and...
Yes, I'm organizing them because they have so many challenges that they have to deal with. So, and they work dividedly. They are not working like in a form of a group or in a form of a cooperative. So we are trying to assist them to form cooperatives because most of them like to work as a group, because if they sell their recyclable as a group, they tend to get a big amount of money. So if each and every member will get a big cut. So they are interested to work as a cooperative. instead of working as an individual.
And so how do you do that? Because as you say, there's a lot of them around in different parts of the country.
Okay, normally what I do, I just go into any landfill site in the country, and surely you will find waste pickers working at the landfill site. And I'll firstly try and find out whether there are people who act as their leaders at the landfill site. Then once I get those people, I'll request a meeting with all of them. When I get the chance to have a meeting with all of them, I'll explain who Groundwork is and what do we do at Groundwork and so on. And then I'll tell them I'm here today because I know that they've got so many challenges with security, not being allowed to earn a livelihood at the landfill site and things like that. So most of them would say, we've been waiting for people like you for a very long time because we've got challenges. Then that's how I normally introduce myself, and that's how we start. Then I'll visit maybe in one province or in one state, I'll visit maybe 10 landfill sites in major cities. Then I'll have a provincial meeting. Then we can able to discuss issues that they are encountering at particular landfill sites and so on and so on.
Let me remind our listeners, we're talking with Moussa Tramane, who is the waste campaign manager in an environmental justice organization called Groundwork. There is a lot of waste in this country, and it doesn't seem to be a real coordinated plan of dealing with it. Yeah. Is that true, or is that just my impression?
Yeah, no, that's true. In South Africa, we just had a waste legislation that was passed in 2008, the Waste Act. Before that, we didn't have any form of a legislation to legislate anything to do with waste. So even the landfill sites, we didn't even have a proper landfill site, and we still do not have a proper landfill site. We still have dumping sites. Those dumping sites, we still use minimum requirements that were issued by Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. Those minimum requirements, they inform the municipality how do they have to deal with waste. Once they collect it, how do they need to deal with it? Like, they need to compact it and cover it every day. So the minimum requirement covers things like that. But the new Waste Act, because it's a new act, the implementation plan is still in the pipeline. So we hope it's gonna cover more than that, to say we need to move away from being a waste producing nation instead to be a reducing nation, or a minimizing nation, if I may put it that way, because we believe also in waste recycling. So the new Waste Act, it also informs the municipalities that they need to look at recycling also before they deal with waste, because if we keep on producing more and more, we consume a lot more virgin resources and things, natural resources. So it's better if we go recycling.
This is Susan Gallimore, host of weekly hour-long Racing Sand Radio, airing on Stanford University's KZSU, FM 90.1. We're talking with Groundwork's Waste Campaign Manager, Moussa Tramane, on waste pickers.
Moussa, you mentioned that some of the things that the waste pickers deal with are security at the sites. What did you mean by that?
The landfill sites, the minimum requirements normally inform the landfill managers to say, waste is not allowed to be recovered at the landfill site. So the waste pickers normally get in there by force because of the circumstances that they are facing. They are unemployed, they are poor, and so on. And they get in there to recover whatever they can recover. For example, a rich suburb, they throw away things that would be of value from people who are coming from poor backgrounds. So they get in there to recover such stuff, including the recyclable material, the paper, plastic, metals, and so on and so on. So they get in there for that particular reason. The security, the municipality introduces security to stop the waste pickers. But because of the number and the persistence of the waste pickers, they normally fail to keep off the waste pickers off the sites.
So you're in essence creating a, let's call it a union of waste pickers, or a network of waste pickers, and,
yes,
and this gives them more power in saying, in accessing the sites, the waste sites, is that right?
Yes, that is correct. We are trying to assist them in forming cooperatives maybe even a national cooperative if that's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. But it will depend up to them as to exactly what do they desire. For us, it's just to guide them and assist them to achieve whatever goal that they want to achieve. Our goal as Groundwork, as an NGO, is to see waste managed properly in South Africa, is to see waste recycling happening in South Africa. So as a vehicle of achieving that, we thought waste pickers are doing a service to the community. So that is why it's very important to organize them. They could be the ones who can force government to go the recycling route rather than going other routes like waste incineration, because okay. We cannot solve a problem by creating another problem.
And yeah. Incineration is a problem. It's also traditionally how waste has been gotten rid of in rural areas.
Yes,
in this
that's
country.
True. Yeah, so we still need also to change the mindset of people.
Yeah.
Because if you burn or if you incinerate the resources or waste, we feel that you're burning money, because some people might be making a livelihood out of that waste.
Says Musa Kamane, with Groundwork, a waste campaign manager. Musa, is there a particular project that you can speak about that will allow listeners to understand more about how you go about this?
Our work is based on, it starts from the ground most of the time. It starts from communities. Normally, the way we work, we approach the waste pickers based at the landfill sites, and we link them with the waste pickers from the next town and so on. Then we create a network. That's how we normally operate.
And so it's word of mouth?
Yeah, it's word of mouth, because we work with vulnerable community. I think you know the history of South Africa. So we still have poor communities who does not have access to today's technologies like the internet and so on and so on. So mostly it's the word of mouth. Yeah, you go there and meet people. Meet under the tree, we meet at the landfill sites. That's how we normally do this.
I was in your office at Groundwork, and you were doing an interview on the municipal site here in Pietermaritzburg.
Yes.
You then went out to the municipal site. Let's talk a little bit about that specific site. What's going on there with waste pickers?
Okay, so what is happening at the New England Road landfill site here in Pietermaritzburg is that there are challenges there. It's the closest landfill site that we are hands-on, that we are working with. Even the municipal staff working at the landfill site, they've got their own problems, like the budget, it's not enough to keep the operations going at the landfill sites. So there is chaos at that landfill site. There is always chaos. That chaos happens while the waste pickers are there, because waste pickers have been fighting for their acceptance at this landfill site. Like, if I recall, in 2008, they were once thrown out of that landfill site by the brutal security. One of the waste pickers got shot from the standoff between the security and a number of waste pickers in Pietermaritzburg.
And killed?
No, he was not killed, fortunately. The case was still on, dragging, because the security opened a case against the waste picker, because they said they were defending themselves. The waste pickers, they were saying waste belongs to no one and it's about to go to the ground, so let us recover that waste so that we can put the food on the table. So there is that history of a standoff between the municipality and the waste pickers. But now the municipality and the waste pickers are back on the table. They are trying to find a solution as to how they can best work together, everyone benefits. What is happening now? The waste pickers are working at that landfill site. My observation, like last week, the operations are going well, but there is still a challenge, because the waste pickers, they only have a verbal agreement with landfill site manager to say they can work at the landfill site, but there is nothing written down. We were fighting for something written down, like an agreement, so anything can still happen to those waste pickers. They can still be thrown out. Say maybe a CDM project coming up at that landfill site, they might be thrown out.
A CDM project, clean
development mechanism, like gas to energy. Yeah, like recovering of a methane gas from the landfill site, and that's converted to electricity and things like that.
So at this point, what's going on is the agreement will probably go forward with the New England landfill site and the waste pickers.
We hope so, because we marched as waste pickers and handed in a petition to the municipal manager. But it's been a year now, we're still waiting. So we're thinking of doing another march to see whether they can really take us serious now, because we speak as people that are not taken seriously in South Africa, because normally it's poor people, it's people who lives in shacks and things like that. So they are not being taken seriously.
Musa Gamene of Groundwork, what difference does it make to the waste pickers to have these kinds of agreements in the long term?
If government nationally would say, will pass a directive to say every municipality needs to recycle their waste by 50% by 2012, for example, the municipalities will be forced. Then they will have to make sure that the waste pickers are involved, because they are the ones who are doing more of a recycling, even though it's still informal. If that could happen, it's gonna be good for the municipality, because they're gonna save space at the landfill sites, and at the same time they're gonna create employment for waste pickers, and the society of South Africa will benefit, and the environment also will benefit. Mm-hmm. Because if this waste is compacted and getting buried at that landfill site, it causes a whole lot of problems, polluting the environment, leachate. When I talk about leachate, I'm talking about the juices that comes from the decomposition of waste, which might go and contaminate the nearest river. Mm-hmm. And you might get someone catching a fish from that nearest river, a fish that is contaminated by this leachate. So that cycle can come back to people, because you might eat that fish and you get contaminated, but the whole problem started from the landfill site. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm making sense.
That makes perfect sense, yeah. And at this point, do you see that it's heading in that direction?
Slowly, yeah, because some of the municipalities, they've shown the desire to incorporate waste pickers in their waste management plans. I will mention maybe three or four municipalities in South Africa: Mafikeng Municipality, Makana Municipality, even Msunduzi Municipality here in Pietermaritzburg. They have shown interest in involving waste pickers in their waste management plans.
What about Durban, eThekwini?
eThekwini, they are also incorporating waste pickers, but in a more mechanized way, and they are a metro as compared to other municipalities that I've mentioned. So they've got bigger budgets for landfill sites. In eThekwini, they've got the materials recovery facility, the machines where you've got a conveyor belt where waste has to pass through and so on. So you need millions and millions to invest in something like that. So it's not feasible with other smaller municipalities.
So from your point of view, the smaller municipalities are easier to educate about the issue and to incorporate the waste pickers into the plan for the municipality?
Yes, I believe so, yeah. Smaller municipalities, they stand a greater chance as compared to big municipalities, because smaller municipalities will have to have the MRF or the recovery that is more labor intensive, which creates employment for people.
I'm visualizing now a waste area with the waste pickers and collecting goods, whatever they happen to be. How do they get them from the site to the area where they can recycle them?
Okay, if I can make an example here in Maritzburg, some of them, they have started making money in a way that one or two of them, they've bought themselves buggies, small buggies. Then say they are recovering a cupboard, they will stash in that cupboard at the back of their buggy. Then once it's a load, they will take that to a nearest factory where they deal with recycling. Nampak, Central Waste Paper, they will buy those materials. That's how they normally do. Sometimes they just use wheelbarrows to carry all the stuff that they have collected as recyclables.
So what you're actually saying is there's a mini industry that starts with people beginning to earn enough money to be able to buy a wheelbarrow, then to be able to buy a pickup truck, as you mentioned.
Yeah, even if you don't buy it, you can rent it to say the person who's got a pickup truck, I've got all this waste that I've collected or all these resources that I've collected. Can I hire you to take it to that particular factory? You have to pay a small fee.
Yeah.
Then that's how they normally do it. Yeah.
This must be work that is very gratifying to you.
Yeah, it's very gratifying. The other thing why I think they have to be organized and have agreements to work with the municipality, it's because as we speak, the landfill sites where they operate receive different kinds of waste, and they normally go there without protective clothing and things like that. It's because they are not organized. They are not well educated to say, to protect yourself when you're going to a landfill site, you need to wear boots, you need to put gloves. So if government will recognize them and assist them in getting organized, I believe that infections from waste at the landfill sites will be decreased. So it's very important that government create a space for them, recognize them, make sure that they wear protective clothing, and so on and so on.
So you do see injuries and do you see illness?
Yeah, you do see illness. Some of the guys, you know some guys by visiting a landfill site, but 6 months or a year down the line, the guy is no longer coming. Maybe he's sick and so on and so on. So you begin to wonder whether they got infected maybe at the landfill site. Maybe they were pricked by a medical needle.
Medical waste or a piece of glass. Or
something like that. So you wonder. So, it happens.
How can people get in touch with you? This is Musa Tlamane that we're talking to. He's the Waste Campaign Manager at Groundwork.
The best way to do is to go to our website as Groundwork. It's www.groundwork.org.za. Then you'll get more information there. Otherwise, you can email me at Musa, which is M-U-S-A, at groundwork.org.za. Then you're able to get me. I'll respond to you within a day or so.
Musa Tlamane, it's been great to have you with us. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you very much, Susan. You're welcome.
Lucky Dube with Freedom, following Musa Tlamane on Emerging Economy of Waste Pickers. As usual, all views and opinions are those of the host and guests and not KZSU or Stanford University. Tune in again next week to listen live on Pacific Time, Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. at Stanford University's KZSU FM 90.1. You can go to our website, Raising Sand Radio, to listen to our internet streaming show, or simply download at your convenience from the website, raisingsandradio.org. Email me at susan@raisingsandradio.org to comment on our shows or suggest topics for future shows. We'll go out with Lucky Dube again, and this time, Freedom.